Hello, I'm Dan Bardell and welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, an Aston Villa podcast where Greg Evans and myself talk about the latest news coming out of Villa Park. Coming up on today's show, we talk about a great international break so far for Jack Grealish and look at Michael Cox's piece today at The Athletic that states you cannot build an England side around Jack Grealish. Also, two starts for Tyrone Mings for England as well. We look at his role for the national side. Before Super Jackie Grealish, there was Super Tommy Johnson. We catch up with the former Claret and Blue cult hero. And finally, we'll also look ahead to the Brighton game, an actual 3 o'clock on Saturday kickoff. We'll look ahead to that at Villa Park. Greg Evans joins me as ever. Greg, in the midst of some lockdown annual leave, I've got to say your timing's been excellent throughout with annual leave this season.
Yes, there's no real right time to have a week off at the moment. It's quite strange. I thought, let's have a week off in the international break, and the Masters was on, so it was a little bit more enjoyable than I hoped, but still a bit boring, isn't it, with this lockdown?
Yeah, I'm sure you'd have liked to have been on the golf course as well, but unfortunately the way the world is, you cannot do that. But Jack Grealish's world must be pretty good at the moment. A good display against Ireland, where I would say he was probably the most effective player without being his best, but then a real statement performance against Belgium on Sunday, Greg.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably the biggest compliment you can give him now, that even when he's not at his best, which he wasn't against Ireland, he still very much makes an impact on the game, doesn't he? Now, I know Ireland are a very struggling side at the moment, so yeah, it's probably one of the easiest games that he'll feature in this season. Certainly for club or country, but the performance against Belgium really stood out. I thought he was exceptional, and rightly so that everybody's now talking about him.
Yeah, I mean, it was an excellent display, particularly the second half. I thought he really came alive and just showed everything that he's all about. I mean, it's been all over Twitter since, but that little flick that he did running onto the ball was just majestic and just sums him up really at the moment. He's full of confidence. He's a dangerous player anyway, but just how much more dangerous is he when he's full of confidence like he is at the moment?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, Jamie Carragher was getting very excited about that flick, wasn't he, in commentary? And I think it was just a statement performance. It was, look, we watch him every week, don't we? We know that he's got that in his locker. We know that he's good enough. But the rest of the world, or the rest of the nation, almost know what he's about now. I like the way that he's just so fearless now. He seems to be driving at defenders in a completely different way that he was previously. And he seems to have got even stronger. The way he brushed Hector Bellerin off the ball against Arsenal. And it was like that in some of the challenges that he was up against in the Ireland and Belgium game as well. It feels like he's taken his game onto a new level now. And I think also he's taken a little bit of the constructive criticism on board as well. You know, Graham Souness was particularly scathing of him, I think, when he said that he doesn't release the ball quick enough. I thought that was a little bit harsh, but it does feel like watching his game now that Grealish has taken that on board a bit, because he doesn't hold on to the ball as long as he maybe used to.
Yeah, and Gareth Southgate Villa fans have obviously got a bit of a problem with Southgate. I can see why that is. I mean, me personally, I like Southgate, got nothing against him, but you look around to the interviews that were in the last few international camps and the interview that Southgate did after this Belgium game, talking about how he's moved at the pecking order and how much of a good game he had, that's got to be positive, because Southgate now, it feels like he kind of has to play him.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't avoid him forever, can you? If he's continually playing well for his club, putting in the kind of performances for his club in training, and some of the England players came out this week and said how impressed they were with Jack Grealish, didn't they? So that's clearly a sign that his teammates rate him very highly, and the coaches as well as Gareth Southgate will be watching on, and you know that they can see that this is a player really at the peak of his powers at the moment, so he should be playing. And admittedly, yeah, he had to go and do it against one of the better nations. And, you know, what better nation to do it against than Belgium, who are ranked number one in the world? So there's nothing really else that Southgate could have said, is it? You know, if he'd have said anything different, you would have been really questioning, you know, what he was going on about, because everybody who watched the game could see that Grealish was the best player on the pitch on the day.
Yeah, and at the time of filming this podcast, it sounds like he may get another start against Iceland as well, which is, it's a far cry from the last international break where he got that one appearance, then we didn't see him again. For him to start all three games again, that's a big statement, and it's a credit to Jack for how well he's done, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's great for Grealish. He'll love that. You know, he wants to be a part of every single game. You know, the real competitive games are the most important ones, of course. But he wants to be playing every England game possible, and he backs himself to be able to recover quickly enough to play in all the games for club and country. You know, there would certainly be some Villa fans hoping that England would just wrap him and Tyrone Mings up in cotton wool at the moment, because the pair of them have both done it for the country, really. They both perform quite well. You know, they're almost not necessarily needed to make an impact against Iceland, and some Villa fans will have their eye on Saturday's game against Brighton, but you know, the two of them are very fit boys, that they'll back themselves to recover in time. And let's hope if they do both feature, then they do the nation proud again.
Yeah, so I just want to ask you something. I'm sure you won't have the answer to this. It's an opinion-based question more than anything. But if we look back to a year ago, I mean, we were doing it, all the Villa fans were doing it, we were clamouring that Jack got an international call-up. And to be fair, I think probably a year ago he should have had a call-up. But do you think if he had got that call-up a year ago, do you think we'd have been seeing the level of performance that we're seeing now in an England shirt from him?
Probably not. I think he's taking his game onto a new level. I mean, it's the way he drives at defenders now. And you know, he wasn't doing that as effectively 12 to 18 months ago. And he's playing with so much confidence as well. You know, the goals and the assists for Villa the back end of last season and the start of this season mean that he's just full of life, full of confidence, and yeah, nothing's phasing him. So I think when you've got a player at that level, that's how they go on and perform well. And probably not a year ago, to be honest. I mean, where were we at a year ago? We were looking at, probably it was around about the Arsenal game, wasn't it? Arsenal losing to Arsenal. Was that September, October? No, it was even later, wasn't it?
I remember us losing to Man City in November. We lost to Man City 3-0, where he was quite good in the first half. I think it was 0-0 at half-time, and then Villa chucked it away straight after half-time, as they did quite often with things last season. But I think you're right in that we thought his level was high then, but his level now is just on a different scale. Every time you think he doesn't have another level to go, he's hit his peak. He finds something else, and it's frightening to think that he could actually go up a few more levels, really, isn't it, with the experience he's getting on the international scene and taking on the best in the world?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, the people that watch Villa would have watched those two games against Ireland and Belgium and thought that was Jack playing well, but he wasn't at his best, was he? I mean, we know there's another gear in him there. He's played better than he did in the two games for Villa. So that's what's even more scary, and opponents watching on won't like to hear that. But I do think the biggest compliment for him is that he's continually improving, isn't he? You know, every season he seems to be getting better and better, and you do just wonder how far he can go now.
Yeah, because something that was levelled at him, certainly in the Championship, probably not as much so since Villa have returned to the Premier League, was his goal and assist output. And Southgate spoke about his goal and assist output as well. And when Jack was interviewed after the game, he was talking himself about he didn't get any goals or assists. That seems to be a real driver for him now, doesn't it? The fact that he wants productivity, he wants to see his name on the stat sheets for goals and assists.
Yeah, he's really motivated by that. I think he shoots on sight now, whereas before he used to take one too many touches. I mean, you could probably argue that the Leeds game, he didn't shoot, you know, sooner when he had that mazy run from the halfway line. But I think in general now, he gets his shots off quite quicker. And that's why we're seeing an upturn in his fortunes in the amount of goals that he scores. I always thought the assist tally was a little bit unfair because I generally felt that most Villa goals came through him anyway. Yeah. So even if it wasn't him with the last pass, you know, it was pretty much him creating the goal anyway. So I always felt that was a little bit harsh and unfair. But, you know, the statistics don't lie. He's got 4 goals and 5 assists this season. And as we've been saying for a couple of weeks now, there's probably no attacker in better form than him at the moment.
De Bruyne has been the standout player in the Premier League for years. But I don't know whether you saw, they had a little chat after the game and swapped shirts. And I think that's a big testament to Jack of how well he did that. England have gone to Belgium, lost, but Kevin De Bruyne isn't the player that everyone's talking about. Literally everyone, even the Belgians, are talking about Jack. And I think Kevin De Bruyne is his hero. I think that's a massive thing. And that's, again, something that will give him even more of a confidence boost, not that he needs it at the moment.
Yeah, totally. It was a nice little moment after the game, the two of them swapping shirts, because you looked at them and you thought, well, that's what Grealish is aspiring to be like. You know, Kevin De Bruyne on a regular basis. And on the night, he was better than Kevin De Bruyne. I still think he's got a little bit of time to go before we can say that he's at that level. There was one wonderful pass with the outside of his right boot, wasn't it, that found one of his teammates, De Bruyne. And Grealish is not going to be that type of player that picks out those spectacular passes as often as De Bruyne, but he's certainly got qualities that De Bruyne would be looking at and thinking, you know, I'd love to have that ball carrying ability, the way he just dazzles past players and holds opponents off. I think Grealish does that better than probably anyone in the Premier League at the moment. So yeah, it was a nice little moment seeing the two of them, and you wonder what the two of them would look like if they were ever in the same team. It'd be quite frightening.
I mean, I don't think Villa are going to sign De Bruyne, Greg, so I think you're going to have to wait a while to see that one, I think. I mean, we teased it a little bit last week. I just want to know your final word on it, really. And is he world-class? Because I think he is now. I think that performance has summed it up for me. I think he's world-class.
Look, I describe him as world-class. I say that Jack Grealish is world-class, but he totally, it's this age-old debate, isn't it, of what is world-class? You know, it's how you define world-class. Somebody tweeted me when I put out a tweet saying that Jack Grealish is world-class, and one of the replies I got was, does that mean that Jack Grealish is the best player in the world in his position? Now, that's just the way that guy who replied to me defines world-class, and it just depends how you define the statement, doesn't it? I just think he's at the level now where he would improve any squad in world football. I think he's probably pushing to get into any team in world football now. I think that in his form, you know, every team would be looking at him thinking we'd have that player in our squad at least, and most probably the team. So that's just why I'm defining and describing him as world class right now.
I mean, I look at it at teams like Barcelona and Madrid at the moment. I think he probably gets in their team, which is an unbelievable thing to say when you think about a few years ago, Jack Grealish was playing in the Championship for Villa, at times a struggling Aston Villa, and he's come on leaps and bounds. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it this morning. I think you probably have, the Michael Cox piece about England building a team around Jack Grealish. Now, when I saw that title and the opening, I was getting ready to hate that article, I'm going to be honest. I like Michael Cox, but I was thinking, I'm not having this before I've even started. But reading through it, I actually thought what he said was very fair, that the best teams in the world, they don't build their team around one player. I think a more suitable question for us to be asking is, England need to find a system that gets Jack Grealish into that team every single international game, and Rashford and Sterling and Kane, because of that 5-2-3 formation doesn't do that. And personally, I don't think the 5-2-3 is working.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a really thought-provoking piece, actually, for Michael. And me and Michael both went to interview Jack last year, and Michael absolutely loved his personality, you know, because he'd never spent time around him before. And he loved the fact that he was so open and honest about his career so far, and about the aspirations that he had for his future. So it's certainly not a piece knocking Grealish in the story. He's just saying basically that England England shouldn't have to need to build a team around an individual anymore in this day and age. You know, we should simply let Jack Grealish be brilliant, but also try and find other brilliance around him too. And I agree with that. I mean, I think all the best teams in the world, and there were some that he mentioned of years gone by, you know, Germany and France and Spain of years gone by, they haven't had to fit players into positions. They've played their best players in their best suited positions. And if there were too many players in one position, they didn't play them. I mean, you know, I always go back to the classic case of Cesc Fabregas with Spain. I mean, it's
exactly what I was thinking.
Example I use all the time in things like this. And Fabregas was absolutely brilliant at the time, yet he couldn't get in the Spain squad, could he? He couldn't get in the Spain team, could he? Because there were so many other brilliant players ahead of him. But if you think, if that was England, like we used to do with Paul Scholes, where we put him out on the left, Spain just didn't do that. They realised that they had good quality central midfielders, so they're not going to play Cesc Fabregas. Whereas England, we just had to make the decision, play Paul Scholes in the central midfield or don't play him at all. And you know, because there are other players better than him, if that was the case. But with Grealish, it just feels like I'd play him every week. Look, you know that, Dan. I'd have him in every important English game, England game. He's in my starting 11. But I don't see why we can't have a couple of wingers, either Sancho or Sterling and Rashford, two out of the three, either side of him. And then Kane up front, you know, as with Jack as the number 10. I don't see why that isn't an issue. And the whole building a team around someone, look, it's 2020 now. For a team to be successful, there needs to be brilliance all around the team.
Yeah, you see, I think Rashford, Sterling, they have to play. Obviously, Kane has to play as well. So if you're staying with that 5-2-3 that Southgate seems to like at the moment, and for me, it's not working, but that's a story for a different day, for a different podcast. But Jack then doesn't get in the team because he isn't going to play as one of the two holding players. So it is a difficult one, but I think we've got to do something in this country to change the formation and get those players in, because I don't think 5-2-3 is working, and I think Jack has to play. But on the flip side of that, the three at the back actually is a big benefit to one of our other players in Tyrone Mings. He started both games so far on the outside left of a back three, and I think if it is three at the back, I think that gets Mings in the team for the Euros.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I think certainly with Joe Gomez's injury, if there's, you know, if Gomez doesn't make the Euros and it's not looking great for him, you know, don't know the exact severity of his injury, but he's going to be out for a while. Then, yeah, Mings looks like a very realistic option in that back three. I still think Connor Cody would be the perfect middleman for the three of them. You know, he's mastered that role at... Yeah, I think just because he's mastered that role at Wolves, you know, I'm very much for playing players who, as I said, just, you know, who are excelling in their position. And Cody has been in that back three for Wolves now for a long time and doing very well. The one thing that Mings has over him as an advantage is that he's much better in the air. Cody often struggles in the air, whereas Mings is very dominant, as we all know. Again, you know, I if it was me selecting the team, I would have Mings in there. I like his style. You know, he's comfortable on the ball. He mops it up well. And he leads by example. You know, I love the way that he sort of, yeah, gets everyone going and he's the real driving force with his voice. But you know, I'm very conscious of Southgate has other ideas, and there are other options as well.
Yeah, I think one massive advantage that Mings has over the other centre backs in the England fold is that just simply the fact he's left footed. If I'm picking a football team, if you're playing three at the back, the guy on the left hand side of the back three, for me, he has to be left footed. It doesn't work any other way.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we're so short on left footers, aren't we? The game before the Ireland game. I think it was the Belgian game England played before that, was it? Or Belgium or Denmark, was it? I remember looking down the squad or the team, and I don't think there was a left footer in the starting lineup. And I thought, I mean, it's just amazing. How have we not got a left footer in the England starting 11? It was incredible. I mean, there might have been one, but, you know, one or zero.
No, I think you're right. I don't think there was.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? So, yeah, that does work in Ming's favour. He's obviously played as a left-back in previous years as well at some of his former clubs. If injuries continue, his Villa teammate, Ezri Konsa, might squeeze away in there if he continues performing the way he does. And I totally get your point with the left foot and right foot. You know, Dean Smith's very big on that. He hates playing two defenders with the same foot. You know, he wants one with the left foot, one with the right foot. And that's why it's working quite well for Villa at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I think Konsa's got a chance. I think that's a valid point that you've come up with there as well, because he's gone the route that the England setup seemed to like, in that he's played for England in the younger ages, and Southgate seems to favour that, doesn't he? He likes a player that's come through the ranks playing all the different levels for England, and Konsa's played in tournaments for the under-21s, I think, as well. So I think he holds an advantage in trying to get in the squad because of that, and the fact that Villa are defending well in general, and Villa are a good side in the Premier League as well. If you had to put money on it, who would you think would be the next Villa player to get an England call-up?
Oh, I think he's probably got to be Konsa, hasn't it? There aren't many other options. I've written a piece on Matt Cash for Wednesday. It's published on Wednesday, and you know, I've spoken very highly of how well he's performed this season. But if you look at the English right backs that he's got to beat, he's currently got Kyle Walker, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Reece James, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Justin, ridiculous. And Kyle Walker-Peters. You know, that's six defenders that are all sort of in the reckoning. And you just think that, you know, there's not really room for another one in, especially when Wan-Bissaka can't even get in the squad. So I think if you ask me who's got the best chance, it's probably going to be Konsa, just because of the fact that Villa are defending very well at the moment. There's not too many other options at centre back, and there's a couple of injuries at present. And you know, as you say, Konsa has come through that route of playing for the younger age groups and building his way up. And look, you know, he seems to be developing very well, doesn't he? He's now a year and a half in the Premier League and seems to be getting better every week. So that's a good sign. And he's very young still.
Yeah, short of left backs as well. I think Matt Target's on good form at the moment. You've alluded to the lack of left footers. I think Ross Barkley will be looking to force his way in back into the England setup as well. He was a regular starter under Southgate last season as well. And then you've got Watkins banging in the goals as well, although I think there's a few players ahead of him in the pecking order at the moment. It's exciting. There could be a few Villa players in the next England squad.
Yeah, it is very exciting. I think Barkley's also another one who certainly got a chance. I mean, that's the not the sole reason, but one of the major reasons that he moved from Chelsea to Villa for this season, because he wanted to play regularly and get back into the Euro squad. So if he continues linking up well with Grealish, then he's got a very good chance as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now we've got time for something a little bit different. Greg and myself caught up with former Villa forward Tommy Johnson a few weeks ago, someone who personally I'd wanted to talk to for ages, and I utilised the name of The Athletic to get that through the door. Greg, good interview, wasn't it? Good to speak to Tommy.
Yeah, really nice guy. He's obviously still in football with Blackpool as the head of recruitment, and he loved his playing days at Villa and Celtic, so it was great to hear from him about some of his memories.
Brilliant chat, and I started off by asking him about an eventful post-season trip to the Caribbean.
I think it was part of the deal, which Yorkie signed, that we had to go over and play in Trinidad and Tobago and then to Barbados. We had to play a couple of games, obviously, but, you know, being end of season and we're a bit worse for wear, so I think we were out one night. And we're walking home with... after God knows how many bottles of Carib, which was the local brew over there. And then I think Tails got chased. Someone was trying to mug him. And then he pulled his hamstring while he was doing it, so he couldn't play in the game. I don't know if he's actually mentioning this to you, but it was hilarious. And then on the morning, I think we were leaving. What was it? He was worse for wear. I think we were leaving either to come home or to fly to Trinidad or something. And... he had his sunglasses on. I think it was 7 o'clock in the morning, walking through the hotel with his cap on backwards and his sunglasses on, just to hide the bags under his eyes because he'd been out all night. But the hamstring one's hilarious because he said he was just trying to run away from this bloke and he was going to mug him, and then he just tore his hamstring. I don't think the gaffer was too impressed.
Yeah, I was just saying, I mean, there must be endless stories like that, Tommy. I presume you could have got away with quite a lot more things than probably you could do now. You know, with social media and everyone having a video camera.
It is totally different, but that's football nowadays. They were probably worse in the era before me for drinking and going out, you know. And it carried on in our era. But that was the normal, Greg. It wasn't, we weren't doing anything out of turn, but that was just the way football was at that time. You'd play football and then you'd go in the players' bar and have a drink and then go out. You know, whether were you missus or whether you were going out with the lads, and then more often than not, you'd probably have a few Sunday dinner as well. But but nowadays that's not the norm, so we wouldn't do it. If we were playing now, we wouldn't do it. But, you know, that's the way football is now. There's no drinking and all that. You just there'd be no drink in the players' bar. I wouldn't imagine players go in the players' bar now, with a players' lounge or whatever you want to call it. Probably have a family room. Without
it's a
drink,
lot different, I think.
As I said, that's the way football's gone. And as I said, if we were starting out now, we'd be exactly the same. So it was just the way it was in when we played. The lads, young lads, ask, you know, what was it like in your day? And we'd tell them, and they would be like, they'd be stunned. You know, as I said, God, the odd time we used to come in on a Monday morning, didn't know whether it was Monday, Friday, Thursday, Saturday night or whatever, you know what I mean? Because we've been out on the Sunday. But what I'd say to young players now, it's a short career and they can earn, we earn good money, don't get me wrong, but they can earn an unbelievable amount of money now and be secure with one contract. I always remember the gaffer pulling me in once and saying, you know, because I was struggling at first, and he was like, well, you know, this is a big move for you. It's a big, you know, you knuckle down and all that. And he was right. They paid a lot of money for us and they want a return. So my advice to youngsters now is don't waste it. Don't waste the talent that you've got and respect your elders and, you know, have a good attitude. If you've got a good attitude, you're halfway there. I wasn't blessed with the best skill in the world, but, you know, I'd like to think I worked hard and had a good attitude. We're finding it now with Blackpool trying to sign players who have come being in the Championship and the Premier League on astronomical amounts of money, but in coming down to League One and having the realisation now that they're not going to be making as much money as they did in the past.
That League Cup win, Tommy, in 1996, can you believe that's the last time Villa won a trophy still?
Unbelievable it is, yeah. I was at Celtic when they played Chelsea. Was that in the FA Cup?
Yeah, 2000.
I can't remember. Was that 2000? Yeah, because I remember watching it. I was at Celtic and I was in the green room just running in and out before we were going out to play to watch it. So I can remember that vividly. But yeah, it's hard to win a cup. As I mentioned before, you've only got probably six teams. So we're going to win the league now, apart from obviously the Leicester when they won it. And the cup is the best chance to win some silverware. And I think it helps when you can qualify for Europe as well, which we did via that. But there's no better feeling, you know. I know their clubs change the squads now, you know, for cup games and all that. And you can see why, because the money to stay in the Premier League is so much and so vast that that's their priority. But, you know, there's no better feeling, you know, going out to Wembley and, you know, that's the two, three seasons I was there, you know, semi-final of the FA Cup and then winning the League Cup as well, you know. It's people still talk about it now. You know, I was fortunate, obviously, when I went to Celtic to win league titles and trebles and cups and that as well. But for most players, they don't win anything, you know, win any trophies. They can have all the money in they want, but, you know, I was never money orientated. But, you know, I've got me, like, for example, England caps, under 21 caps, and me medals from when I played. And you could give me as much money as you want. It doesn't matter, you know. I've got the trophies there to show and the medals to show for it. But that season was brilliant. The League Cup, you know, the semi-final games against Arsenal were especially the one at Highbury, was unbelievable, you know. 2-0 down after 20 minutes. Bergkamp scores an absolute havoc. And then, you know, we just got back in the game and York, we got us back into the game. It was a ding-dong battle, you know. It was cutting thrust end-to-end. Great goals and a great game, you know, and that was a good Arsenal team at the time, you know, bones about it. And they were probably favourites to beat us, but we held out at 0-0. I think it was 0-0 at home. And, you know, we got through to the final. And, you know, the whole week leading up to the final was brilliant, you know, doing interviews, you know. I was fortunate. I got injured at Ipswich 6 weeks before. I tore my thigh muscle and I was just desperate to get fit for the final, and I trained the day before. That was my first training session.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was touch and go whether I would make it. And the gaffer, I think we had three subs at the time, and the gaffer put us on the bench, which was brilliant. I still hammer him now for not putting us on, to be honest, you know, because we're 3-0 up and I think we're not going to lose it now. So that's my only gripe with the gaffer. But I was delighted, like, I was on the bench, you know, and the celebrations after. We stayed in London, all the families and friends were in the hotel. And then, not forgetting, we've got an FA Cup semi-final the week later. So, and you go back to the drinking culture, but God, we were absolutely hammered. Rightly so, you know, with the celebrations. But then you forget we're playing Liverpool a week later at Old Trafford in the semi-final.
Is that why we were 3-0 down quite early doors in that game, because of the celebrations?
I think Robbie Fowler might have had something to do with that, not the way we played. No, they were just the better team on the day, weren't they? Yeah, definitely.
So that was definitely a good time. We're going to move to a sad time now, something that really upset a 12-year-old Dan Bardell. It's that time when you left the club, Tommy, and I don't think I've ever spent time with Brian Little and not mentioned him selling you. So we've got a little audio clip here of him talking about why he let you go.
I actually think transfers have been a problem since 1997 when you sold Tommy Johnson. Would you agree with that?
Discuss. I'm going to step away.
Tommy Johnson is probably my favourite, well, one of my favourite footballers of all time. And I owed it to him to be playing football regularly. And I've said this to you before.
Yeah,
when I got a call off Celtic, and it was, like, I think it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I don't know whether the manager had been out and just got in and thought, right, I'm ringing Brian Little. but I was fast asleep in bed, in all honesty. And I'm going, yeah. But straight away, as soon as it came through, I thought, I've got to speak to Tommy. I owe it to him, you know. He was brilliant for me. He played a lot of games, but a lot of the times I would play with the three midfield players, so, you know, a Draper, Townsend and Taylor combination. But whenever Tommy played, he was brilliant. And whenever Tommy went on, he was brilliant. Obviously, after he'd been sick in the corner, he was brilliant, but he was a nervous wreck. But he was a great lad, and I owed it to him. And when it was Celtic, I knew that was the call, that I've got to speak to Tommy. If it's right for him and he wants to do it, I've got to let him do it. And sometimes, again, going back 20-odd years now, the only place for players was to be in the first team. You know, there wasn't the big squads that there is today, and they weren't all in a position where they were happy at that. A lot of mentality has been changed over the last 20 years with youngsters being developed and learning that if they don't play today, it's because it's best them having a rest and all sorts of different things. There's lots of mentality things that have made the modern day player different. But in that era, you know, from a personal point of view, if I had 15 players and I could have played like Ron Saunders had his squad of 14 or 13, or if I could have had 14, 15 players that I knew I could keep happy every week, I would have happily stayed down that route. But it's a mentality change now. So they're happy to have 20, 22, 24 players who are first team players. Then it was Tommy Johnson needed to play and I owed him that. And I'm not answering it again.
What do you make of that, Tommy?
As I said before, you know, I hold a Gaffer in the highest respect, you know, I still speak to him quite often, and obviously not at the minute, can't see him as much because of the COVID and going down to see Villa, but it's great to hear what he's got to say, you know, and we've had this conversation many times. I think I didn't realise he liked me so much, you know, until after we finished, until I'd left, honestly. But yeah, we had that relationship, you know, coming from the Northeast, and, you know, he'd signed us, paid a lot of money for him, and I think he just, like what I, as he said, I wasn't going to be playing all the time, but when I did, I gave 100% for him, which I always did. But the funny thing is, when the gaffer rang, as I was at home, and we lived about half an hour from each other, and I went over with my agent, he hasn't mentioned that, and we sat in his house just talking for hours. And he always said, he said in his interview, he says, I had to tell you, you know, out of respect for you, because I love you so much and what you've done for us and all that. And so we just sat down for hours and hours talking football. He says, I don't want you to go, but as you've heard, you know, I've got to tell you, Celtic, a massive club. It's up to you. It's down to you. If you want to stay here, you can stay here. I'll give you a new contract and all that. But, you know, once I'd heard Celtic were in for us, you know, I just had to, I would have regretted it for the rest of my life, you know, and that's no disrespect to Aston Villa. I wanted to play regular, and the gaffer's right, it is different nowadays, but the respect I've got for him, for first and foremost signing us, you know, wanting us to be part of his team, and then actually ringing us up at home and saying, come on, I need to speak to you about something. I thought, oh my God, what have I done now, Gaffer? You know what I mean? Come round to my house, I think, oh, it's like going to the headmaster's office. I thought I'd done something wrong. I said, oh, I'm sure I've been all right. And when I went round there, we just sat down and talked, as I said, talk football. And it was a decision that I made. And in the end, it turned all right with my Celtic career. But I think, I would definitely would have regretted it if I hadn't have gone to Celtic. As I've already said, I loved my time in Villa. I wasn't a regular. And as the gaffer said, and we've just mentioned, you want to play football. All I ever wanted to do was play football. you know, and it wasn't going to be happening on a regular basis at Villa. It was a decision, a massive decision for us. There wasn't many teams I would have left Villa at that particular time to go to. And unfortunately, Celtic was one of them where I had to make that decision. And, you know, it was the right decision.
Well, it's been great to talk to you today, Tommy. As I say, that decision left me very upset, but you've made up for it today by talking to us.
Sorry,
it's all right, mate. I was given a derogatory nickname to call you by Tails as well, but I've said no. I'm not going to do that.
Oh, God, Carrot. That's what they used to call us. It's probably something else.
He wanted to say Milk Bottle Said Hello was what he wanted me to say.
That's because of my lovely tan.
I thought it might be something to do with that, Tommy, but all the best.
Thank you, Dan. Been a pleasure. Thank you for some great memories as well, and I hope they'll have a great season.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I tell you what, I've given Brian Little some stick over the years, Greg. When I've seen him about Tommy Johnson, he upset me a lot as a youngster. I think that may be one of the first times I cried as a Villa fan when a player left, actually.
Really, Dan? Has there been many others since then?
I think there was a few years in a row when players kept leaving, wasn't there? I remember Staunton going one summer, then York went the same, ended up going the same summer, I think, as well, and then Bosnić the summer after. So there was a time when a young Dan Bardell was very upset, but over the years you get used to the heartache, don't you? And I'm more than used to players leaving now, although obviously we were getting ready for Jack to leave and that didn't happen. So yeah, the tears have been held off for a few more years. Hopefully, let's look forward to the Brighton game now. Now, they've got off to a difficult start, Brian. Every time I watch them, I'm impressed by them, but their points tally is pretty mediocre so far, Greg.
Yeah, they're quite easy on the eye, aren't they? But as you say, it's been a difficult start for them. I've seen a couple of their games. I watched the close defeat to Man United where...
Oh, they should have won that game.
Yeah, I think the woodwork three or four times, you know, and United got a couple of late goals. So, look, they've been beaten by the bigger boys, Chelsea, United, Everton, I think, as well. But they have been a little bit unlucky. They just need to start taking their chances, really. And I think they'll be all right from there. There's certainly worse teams in the division than them. But if you're Villa, you're looking at this game now thinking, if you're really serious about finishing in the top half, it's a game that Villa have to go and win.
Yeah, it's a massive chance to get consecutive victories and build some momentum again. Because you did kind of feel like we lost a bit of momentum with the two defeats, even though we'd still had an excellent start. But to get another run of consecutive victories would be massive. And it just would stabilise us really in and around the top six, which is massive even at this stage of the season.
Yeah, it's mad really that we're saying that, isn't it? You know, stabilising around the top six. Because it's I think we're still getting a little bit carried away because it's not an in-house expectation to finish in the top six, even though Villa are there now and potentially could go top of the league if Chelsea don't win on in the early game on Saturday and then Villa go and beat Brighton. They'll go top of the league, which will be, you know, it might only be for a short period, but it'll be an incredible achievement after eight games and with a game in hand. So I think we've still got to, at this point in time, because it's still very early into the season, we've still got to just remain a little bit grounded, not get too carried away. A quick look down the run-up towards Christmas, it looks very favourable for Villa. But unfortunately, that's where the troubles begin, isn't it? You know, Villa must not expect to beat the so-called lesser lights in the division just because they've seen off some of the bigger boys. I think they just need to remain grounded. I know it's a very, very boring cliche, but just literally take each game as it comes and not become almost the Wolves of last season, who were exceptional against the big boys but then struggled against some of the lower teams. Now I know Villa have obviously beaten Sheffield United and Fulham already, but the defeats to Leeds and Southampton maybe just put things into perspective a little bit. I think I do really think this game against Brighton will give us a good, clear indication of where Villa are. And if they do win, it will just take them nicely into the next few games. And then maybe towards Christmas time, we can start getting a little bit excited if the results continue.
Yeah, I mean, the fact we're even talking about it, it is massive. I felt in a good place going into the start of the season, but I've got to be honest, I never expected a start like this. I wasn't expecting to absolutely trounce Liverpool. I wasn't expecting to rock up at the Emirates and win 3-0. So it's been an amazing start. You should be on the Football Clichés podcast, to be fair, with some of the stuff you've said there. But you're right. You do have to take each game as it comes. And Brighton and West Ham are two very winnable games, just looking ahead to the next 7 to 10 days. And Villa can win both of them. They really are in an excellent position. And then you do start thinking about dreaming and maybe expectations within the club even itself. Maybe they change, don't they, Greg?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, look, you know, if they win the next two games, that's 7 wins out of 9. I mean, you know, it's almost bloody title contending for them, isn't it? It's incredible, really. But I just think Villa fans and the team need to remain grounded, because that's when the troubles can start to creep into things, because it's been a great start, but it's so easy to lose a couple of games in the Premier League. I think the biggest, the most impressive thing about Villa this season is going and winning that game at Arsenal, because if they'd have lost 3 on the bounce, you then start to worry, don't you? You start to think, well, when is this losing streak going to end? And I think that was a really, really important performance, not just because they beat Arsenal, who are still recognised as an elite team, but the fact that they got back to winning ways. And yeah, if they can put a couple of wins together, then yeah, who knows how far they can go.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've talked about international football a fair bit in this podcast. Some Villa fans want Villa players to not play for their countries because they want them to be fresh for Villa. Me personally, I like it if our players are getting recognition, because it means they're doing well. But what do you make of all this COVID stuff now? Because obviously players are coming back from international duty. I think Doherty has come back and has got COVID. I think I've just seen on social media, like, players are coming back from international duty. Salah's picked up COVID as well. Like, fingers crossed Villa don't have any issues like that going into the Brighton game.
You're just hoping for the best, aren't you? You're hoping that none of the players contract this horrible virus. I mean, with the protocols in place, you'd hope that they would avoid contracting it, but so many players and teams have been affected. It's hard to know, really. You just can't plan for it. You just have to wait and see and hope for the best. In terms of England's international players, yeah, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, you know, I think that some Villa fans will be looking at these next few days, hoping that England do wrap Grealish and Mings up, and hope that they don't pick up any injuries, because the problem Villa have got is if they pick up one or two injuries, there's not much in reserve to come and replace them, and you feel like they're going to be severely weakened after that. I mean, McGinn's had a very busy schedule with Scotland, hasn't he? Luiz and Martinez are away in South America. Trezeguet and Traore out in Africa. So, you know, that Dean Smith will be hoping that they all come back unscathed, and if Villa can name the same starting team for the game against Brighton as they've done in previous weeks, they'll fancy their chances.
Yeah, almost forgot to mention Scotland qualifying for the Euros, but with John McGinn part of that setup, absolutely massive for him. How pleased are you for McGinn?
Yeah, fantastic. You know, and it's a great achievement for McGinn, because, you know, he's on this incredible journey himself that we sometimes forget as well. You know, it was only 4 or 5 years ago that he was getting rejected. I think it was 5 years ago that he was struggling to find a club. You know, he was at St Mirren and didn't know where his career was going. He admitted that he didn't think he was good enough for any Scottish Premier League club to come and take him. Hibernian did in the end, and he helped them to promotion, and then to win the cup, and then Villa signed him, and then Villa got promoted. Then he had a good season in the Premier League, and now he's on the verge of being in a team that could potentially top the Premier League table, albeit for just a short period. And he's the captain of his country, so it's an incredible journey that he's on. He's still quite young himself, and it just feels like all these Villa players are slowly developing now into really talented, fully fledged internationals as well. And they've got so many years ahead of them. So it's quite exciting times.
Remember that right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 and you can read all Greg's articles on The Villa and so much more. So just go to theathletic.com/VillaPod, sign up to that. That's theathletic.com/VillaPod and you can sign up for just £1. I mean, me and you were going to have a bit of a brainstorming session, weren't we? And I went away and had some thoughts about maybe potential articles, and you'll be surprised to learn I've come up with absolutely nothing, Greg. So I'll get my thinking hat on and we'll be back with next week's edition of 1874 as well. I hope you enjoy the rest of your time off, mate. Enjoy it.